This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
I've never even heard of hurling.
Welcome, everybody. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore, Bob Stelton in for Danny O'Neill. We are live at T-Mobile Park, Edgar's Cantina. We start out with a guest. Look who's sitting next to Dave Wyman, the one, the only Tom Murphy is here. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I like that we started out before even coming on the air looking at your Wikipedia page, seeing what's true and what's not.
He's never even heard of hurling.
Hurling.
On your Wikipedia page, you got to get somebody in there to correct that.
Yeah. What does it say, a champion hurler?
It says that he's a fan of hurling. He doesn't know what hurling is. I thought hurling was throwing up.
So did I. Yeah. You're not a fan of that?
No. I'll do anything to that.
I'm glad we got that cleared up. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Hey, what's the season been like for you? Is I guess, still one of the new guys here, and it's you come in the middle of a rebuild. It's been tough in terms of wins and losses, but you've... The catching positions never look stronger in terms of the production. What's the transition been like for you?
It's been great. You know, I'm thankful every day I come to the ballpark here because I know the opportunity that I have. And that's something that, you know, I've kind of craved my whole career. And, you know, coming here and being given a role right away to start the season with something new for me. And I'm just trying to take it all in and do the best I can.
Tom, I think there's a different perception of on the outside versus the inside. I've been on bad teams, not that you're a bad team, but I mean losing teams, you know, before, and everybody assumes that, I mean, it's a much different perception inside the clubhouse or locker room. It's everybody's a competitor, everybody's a professional, everybody, and you always think you can win, right? I mean, explain sort of I guess to people that think that everybody's walking around with their heads down, that man, you get a chance to go out and compete every day.
Yeah, and yeah, I think if you came to the game here at 2 o'clock, you'd see how hard everybody's working every single day, too. I mean, there's guys on the field right now working. I don't think there's been a game where we haven't taken, you know, infield ground balls, outfield play. You know, it's just a lot of different things than most teams do in the big leagues, and we realize that we're a developing team, and that takes a ton of work because it's so different here at this level, and guys are young and getting experience, and like I said, that work's going to go a long ways.
Speaking of working out here on the field, did I see Ichiro throwing batting practice out there?
Yeah, he does a great job with it, too.
Yeah. He looks like he's into everything he does, man. He's still, like, he's got the wristbands on, full uniform.
Yeah, he practices in the cage, his BP and stuff, so he does a good job.
Do you get a chance to talk to him? Because I understand he's a tremendous influence on everybody.
Yeah, I do. Anytime he's around, which is every day, he still does his full routine and stuff like that. Whether it's a little side conversation or picking his brain about how he played, he's a wealth of information and a model of consistency for sure.
So, Tom, as the story goes, when you were released by the Giants, you were actually home on your couch watching The Office when Jerry DePoto called?
Yes, yeah. We were in Arizona at that time because that's where spring training was for me. It was me and my wife just kind of sitting there watching The Office. Her not so, you know, willingly, but we were doing it.
So what were your plans at that time? Just waiting it out and seeing who would call?
Yeah, because I didn't know whether I was going to end up in AAA was San Francisco or another big league team would pick me up, so I was just kind of waiting.
Who's your favorite character?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Dwight Schrute?
It's got to be Dwight. I mean, how could you not say that? Yeah.
We had Dwight Schrute on our show.
Did you really?
A month or two ago.
Yeah,
Rain Wilson, obviously.
One of them.
Yeah. I saw him in London out there for the Seahawks game. I was this close to going up and being a fanboy and saying, hey, how's it going, Dwight? And I didn't do it, man. And now I regret that.
I believe it because he's a once-in-a-lifetime character.
Have you watched the English version of the show?
I have not, actually. It's so hard to deviate from the original or with the American version that I just stick with it.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's very short. It's only two seasons, six episodes a season. But Ricky Gervais plays the Michael Scott role.
And he writes for the American one, too.
Yeah, he produces and writes. It's fantastic. So if you're a fan, I think you'd dig it.
Yeah, I would, I'm sure.
I've never seen an episode of The Office.
Goodness. That's a stunning bit of information
what does that say?
Right there.
Okay, Tom, what does that say about me? Does it make me a bad person or something?
No, I don't know if I can have the same humor as you now. You know what I mean? Like, all my humor is based on The Office. So I don't even know what to throw at you.
All of your humor?
Yeah.
Seriously? Well, throw something at me and let me see if I get it.
Ah, jeez. I don't even know.
Get ready for a blank look here. Go ahead.
Yeah, right?
All right, let me just come
in. Do you even understand that's what she said? Like, without watching The Office?
That's what she said?
Yeah.
Well, I've heard of that one for a long time. That preceded The Office, so didn't it?
I don't know.
That's what she said?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
I think so.
Does your wife appreciate that sense of humor?
You know, she will claim till she's blue in the face that she hates the show, but we'll be sitting there in bed at night, and she'll be chuckling, laughing, watching, you know, reading her own book or whatever, but she's watching the
show. She can't give in now. No. She's dug in her heels on it that it's not good.
Yeah, it's part of our life now.
Okay. All right. Why did you want to be a catcher?
I don't know. I was a pretty hyper kid, I guess, and that position always had something going on. You know, and I pitched as well, you know, dabbled with shortstop or whatever, but catching just kind of caught on, and I enjoyed the excitement of it.
See, it drives me nuts. My kid was a catcher. He's 15 years old right now, and he switched to being an outfielder, and I said, "There's the outfielders are a dime a dozen. Why don't you hang in there and keep catching?"
Yeah. You know, looking back upon it now, obviously you don't think about it when you're a kid, but there's so much skill involved behind the plate there, and it's such an art, especially with today's game.
When I was in the fourth grade, I was the catcher for our team, and I got plowed at the plate and wet my pants. So that was a bad experience.
That was the last day he was a catcher.
Yeah. How about those big collisions that you see at the plate? Like, you know, the Mariznick versus Lucroy,
yeah.
You know, have you been involved in a few of those?
Yeah, so I actually had this conversation the other day. In 15, I was able to play with the Pan Am team and the U.S. national team. We were playing Puerto Rico, and that was the only time I've ever really been ran over. You know, ball coming in from right field and turn around, and all of a sudden, boom, the guy's right there. So it was interesting, that's for sure. I'm glad that the rule's in place. I think it just is better for the game, better for the catchers for sure.
So you like it because a lot of the old school fans, the traditional fans, says, oh, they're ruining the game. They're taking the soul of the game away with, you know, collisions at second base and what's happening at home plate. So as a catcher, you don't mind the way it's being called now.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody can look at what happened to Lucroy and say that's a good thing. You know what I mean? That's the way I see it, and that's as drastic as it gets. Obviously, you see a guy laying on the ground there after a play. But I just don't see how anybody can enjoy watching that.
How hard is it for you to remain productive as a hitter when you have so much to do, so many responsibilities as a catcher working with the pitcher? And it just seems like it's an all-encompassing job that'd be difficult to do.
It is. You know, I'm busy from the time I get to the field to the time I leave, which to me fits me and fits my personality, obviously. It's a work. It's constant work. Yeah, you're not always going to feel great, obviously, but you find a way to do it and put as much stock into both sides of the ball as you can.
How hard is it to catch? I mean, I know you don't do it a ton, but the idea of catching back-to-back nights, I mean, getting up, squatting down, the knees, the back, how does the body feel after a game?
It's tough. I mean, you know, guys don't catch 150 games anymore. You don't see those types of catchers anymore. Salvador Perez is about the only one in that, you know, when he's healthy, he will catch that many games. But organizations have realized the importance of having two quality catchers behind the plate because one guy just can't do it the whole season.
Usually a catcher is pretty flexible. Can you do, like, the splits and all that stuff?
I'm pretty close, actually. Are Surprisingly you? Pretty close. Yeah.
Wow. What about in the offseason? Like, what kind of, like, squats or things like that? Do you do specific exercises to, you know, because you're a catcher?
Yeah. I would say it's pretty intensive. I train myself as hard as I possibly can. Probably more in the way of like a javelin thrower would train, more so than a standard baseball player, just because of the intensity of things and the way the sport's played, I think you get more out of it.
A javelin thrower?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did you pick that as a comparison? Did you throw the javelin?
No, but I've studied a lot of what they do and how they train, and those guys are absolute animals, and that's what I want to be.
Wow. Yeah. Maybe they meant to on your Wikipedia page to put that you're a fan of javelin throwers.
Yeah, I am definitely
hurling.
So. Yeah.
That's why he's not a hurling fan. They don't train as hard.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you have I read something about when you came here, you were working with Tim Laker, the hitting coach. Did you make some changes to your swing a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm changing something almost every day. You know, not necessarily huge things, but trying to make it as clean as possible in the game, which is extremely hard to do. But I can't thank Lake and JD and Dustin and those guys for what they've done for me and how much work they've put in. You know, it feels like I'm getting back just as much as I'm putting in terms of their attention and willingness to show up every day and work. And it's been just an amazing experience with those guys.
You got some great power, too. I read somewhere, I don't know what level it was at, but you were at Fenway Park and you hit it over the Green Monster.
Yeah, that was college baseball, actually, summer ball. That swing kind of changed my life. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Meant that much to you?
It didn't mean as much to me as it did the scouts. So that was where it kind of changed my life for sure.
You've got a unique setup when you're approaching the plate. You kind of bend over. What is that? Is that something you developed in college, or is that something that's come along as a big leaguer?
It's kind of developed throughout the minor leagues. I've always been big on the breath and trying to kind of reset after every pitch. That just kind of puts my body in a position where it's a little tensed up, and then I take a deep breath, release it, stand up, and I'm good to go after that.
Is that something that somebody showed you, or you just developed that on your own? I'm gonna pause here. And
that kind of pause I developed on my own, but you know, actually Andy McKay was my mental skills coordinator in the Rockies system, and you know, obviously he was huge in Ken Revisa and the breath and that sort of thing, and I kind of took that to heart as soon as we started talking, and it's been a part of my routine ever since.
Are you a superstitious guy?
I'm a little stitious.
Not super.
Not super.
Yeah.
Sort of stitious.
No, I'm not at all. I'm actually anti that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I tried to do everything I didn't do the day before, so I don't, you know, fall into that pattern.
So you don't have, like, a special meal or anything like that?
No, I don't believe in any of that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Who on the team do you hang out with? Are catchers, like, a tight group you guys hang out with? Pitchers? Are pitchers weird?
To say the least.
Yeah.
I mean, to say the least. Most of them are a little off, but no, we have a great relationship. You know, catchers stick together well. I love Vogie's humor. You know, that guy cracks me up every day, so we have a good time.
Vogie, man, got tossed out of a game the other day.
Yeah. I was like, man, I was so proud of him.
Yeah, he threatens it almost every day, so it finally came to fruition for him, but yeah.
So, Tom, when you're away from the park, what do you like to do for fun?
So, you know, I'm a huge family guy. I have two kids, my wife, and, you know, they're great. I love and spend time with them, but my off season is hunting. That's my passion outside of baseball, and I do it every chance I can.
How old are your kids?
My son is 1 year old, actually like 13 months, you know, whatever you want to, you know, that sort of thing goes, but, and then my daughter's 8 years old.
Okay, yeah. So you got a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
They call that the rich man's family.
Is that what that is?
I got a boy and a girl. I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Nah. Are you done?
I don't know.
Maybe personal. Too personal.
Yeah, no. I know my wife would probably have like 10 of them, so I'm sure we're not done.
What kind of hunting do you do?
Mostly whitetail and black bear. Yeah.
Okay. More importantly, do you have a dog?
We do. We have a German Shepherd.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's a boy, girl?
Boy, his name's Maddox. He's a big part of our family as well.
So, there you go, Jim.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know that there's a podcast coming out in about a week? It's called Bark. It's the second season.
Really?
And you think The Office is cool? Yeah. Wait till you check out Bark.
Really?
Yeah. I just talk about dogs. Yeah,
you ever utter the phrase?
Do you think you'll listen to it? Said? I mean, honestly, is there any chance that you would listen to Bark?
I think there's other things on the list.
Shut up,
that would probably come up first.
Dave, I saw that. I don't think I heard what you said.
I think there's other things on the list that
I heard.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
I hope Omar starts.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry to interrupt your self-promotion.
Okay. Hey, thanks for joining us, Tom.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. It was a good time.
I guess that's it. He's sending you off.
You know what? Wait, not going to listen to Bark. I'm done with him.
He's actually Michael Scott. He's like
is
the
he?
Closest thing to
that
Michael
makes so
Scott
much sense. You know, he doesn't actually watch it, but he's that guy.
And the beauty is he's got no idea what that means.
No.
Yes.
I don't. Yeah, it's a character on The Office.
It is.
See, I pay attention.
Steve Carell. Okay. Yeah. Steve Carell. Hey, I want to ask you something. We had Dan Wilson on the other day, and I had heard somebody talking. Former player talking about catchers and talking about defense and saying, you know, a defensive catcher kind of is, they are what they are.
Yeah.
That you can't really, a guy who doesn't have a great arm throwing, you say, or doesn't have great footwork or doesn't have great technique, that's kind of who they're going to be, which didn't sound right to me. I feel like you could improve anywhere on the field, but do you buy into any of that? This is a former player that was saying that about a catcher. They were talking about somebody whose defense wasn't great, and, well, you're going to have to live with it because it's kind of who they're going to be. They're not going to drastically improve.
Yeah.
Do you buy into that?
I think there's certain parts of the game that still can be improved. Obviously, physical strength is something that, you know, guys, whether they want to take stock into it or not, or something they can improve in the offseason. But you look at, like, framing and how important it is in today's game with catchers. Me and personally, working with Tony Arnorich, our catching coordinator, this has been above and beyond my best year. I mean, substantially better than I ever have in terms of framing. But it's one of those positions where it takes just as much work as everything else, and it's hard to work hard at that position because it is so taxing. But you know, I think there's a reason why you see so many middle infielders now become catchers, because they have those innate abilities that are just built into them with, you know, good hands, mm-hmm. good arm, quick release sort of thing. So, sometimes it is easier to choose somebody else than it is to develop a guy.
Tom, I'm going to ask you about the relationship you have with the umpire behind the plate. Seems like there's some camaraderie there. Like whenever the umpire gets hit with something, you always see the catchers turn around, make sure they're okay. But you ever get crosswise with a guy behind the plate? And I mean, because that's got to be awkward, because if you exchange words in like inning one or two, you know, you got to keep going out there every inning. And you have any weird experiences with those guys?
Yeah, I think the best approach I've found now is just be brutally honest with them, whether they want to hear it or not. You know what I mean? And,
they appreciate your honesty. Like,
exactly, and that's the way I look at it.
You know? You missed that one, you'll tell them that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll ask them if they'd like me to check for them during the game to go in and, you know, track or whatever. And if I'm right, I'll tell them I'm right. If they're right, I'll tell them they're right. You know, yeah. And that's the type of relationship I would want in return. So that's what I try to give them. And, you know, I try to be as cordial with them as I possibly can, but at the same time, we're out there trying to win.
That's a great policy that you have, because other than that, there's a bunch of passive aggressive comments or whatever. Yep. And if you're just straightforward, seems like that's the way to go.
Yeah, I want them to know I'm honest.
Yeah.
Are there nights when you go out there and go, oh man, this is going to be a tough night because this guy's got a tight strike zone?
Yeah, there's definitely those nights as well. Yeah, it's we have access to a bunch of information now, obviously, through different media sources, and True Media is something I use a lot, and they have the umpire zones and that sort of thing. And you kind of going into it knowing whether or not you're going to get certain calls or not.
But as long as they're consistent, this is what I hear pitchers say. I don't care if they call high, low, outside, inside. Just be consistent with where you're calling it, right? Is that the biggest thing?
Yes and no. I think pitchers are a little that's a tough one to talk to them about, because every ball that leaves their hands is a strike in their opinion. So I'm very realistic. You know, like I said, I try to be as honest with my pitchers as I am with the umpires. And you know, consistency is the hardest thing to do in this game on both sides of the ball.
Were you surprised Jim didn't get your comment about being a little stitious?
No, that's a tough one.
It's an office reference as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's pretty funny, Tom.
Jim, do you have anything else?
Now, is bark similar to woof? Do you guys remember woof?
No, I don't know.
It was a fax, text, email, notification.
Woof.
Yeah. What was woof?
That's what you should have called it.
Oh,
wolf instead of bark.
All right, I think Tom's going to listen to it. I do. I have high hopes.
I may not.
I have high hopes.
He may not.
All right, I'll talk to you about your German Shepherd. That'll be an episode of Bark.
That'd be a great one.
Okay. Well, Tom's going to continue to watch The Office and be happy.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, how about this? How's this for a transition?
Yes.
We're all enjoying watching you this year. How's that?
Very nice.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I am. I mean, boy, it's been, because I was sitting there thinking, well, David Freitas seems like he's a pretty good backup catcher. I wonder why they got this Tom Murphy guy. And then here you are. You come to town and you're posting numbers like you're a starting catcher, that you should be a full-time guy.
Yeah, I mean, the effort's definitely there, and then, you know, hopefully people see that, and the passion for the game is always going to be there for me.
So you didn't like Tom in the beginning?
He wasn't nearly as welcoming.
Yeah, he wasn't a fan.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still kind of on the fence with it.
If he listens to the podcast, you're going to be his favorite player.
Yeah,
there we go.
Hey, Tom, it's good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for coming up here, and congrats on your season and the way things have gone, and look forward to talking about The Office with you in the future.
Awesome. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, there you go.
Yep.
Tom Murphy of your Seattle Mariners here. Good to talk to you, man. You got to watch the show, Jim. You would understand stitches.
Well, I got to watch Office Space, too. Office Space, I haven't seen either
one. They're not the same, but...
No, I know, but one's a movie and one's a series. Yeah, I've told you, I haven't seen Seinfeld. I haven't seen Cheers. I don't like any of the shows that have the canned laughter.
You've never seen Seinfeld?
No.
Seinfeld's a live audience.
I haven't.
Really?
I haven't seen Cheers.
What do you watch outside of sports? Anything?
Undercover Brother.
No, a shower scene, apparently.
I like watching Angie and Bill Krueger every night.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and Ryan Roland Smith.
Yeah, I think you wrote about that.
And Brad Adam.
Way to pander. That's nice. That's nice.
Well, no, I enjoy them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Tom was great.
He was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
He was okay.
The catching position's never been stronger in terms of the output, offensively speaking. I mean, you know, with all due respect to Zunino, who everybody loves, every time he came up to the plate, you felt like, well, that's going to be the end of this inning. He's either going to hit a home run or he's going to strike out.
Yeah, that's been fun to watch the production from catcher, because Omar has been great.
I believe he's still your leading hitter.
Yeah.
Your catcher.
Yeah. Well, Nola, I think, has a little bit better average, but less sample size, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, and seeing that from Tom Murphy, that's pretty awesome. So, yeah, it's interesting, the perception, you know, just because being – with the 92 Seahawks, the 2-14 season, I bring that up a little bit too much, probably comparing to this team.
I like how you changed
that bad.
I like how you changed bad team.
That bad. Yeah, that was
not very well done by me. But, yeah, I mean, like, you don't really know that, though, when it's going on. You look around and you think, man, we're good. We're professionals. We've got guys that, and we had a really good defense that year, but it just doesn't feel anywhere near what the perception is from other people. And you're just going out every day trying to do the best that you can. I've said this before. I feel like I was really trying to make sure everybody knew that it wasn't my fault, you know? Like, I'm not going to be part of the, you know, the complaining. Like, I'm going to go and play as hard as I can. And so I think that's what you're seeing out of Tom Murphy.
Do you think players become selfish when it becomes that a situation where you're going, all right, obviously postseason's completely out the window. I'm just going to make sure my numbers look good. I'm going to make sure I'm not the one on film people are pointing at going, well, this guy's part of the problem.
So you mean like ditching your gap to go try to get a sack
maybe
or something.
You're going to do something you otherwise wouldn't, or you're going to, even on a baseball diamond where somebody's going to try to make a play they otherwise wouldn't. Take chances, I guess, where you're saying, well, the consequence isn't postseason because that's out the window. So I could see an environment like that where it becomes very individual.
Yeah. I mean, somebody ditching their zone to go get the quarterback or whatever. I've heard of that before, but not necessarily in losing seasons. It's just a great story. Fred Young, who was a really good player. Do you remember Fred Young? Fred with two
D's. Yeah.
He was a great special team player. He came out of like New Mexico or New Mexico State. And so he played inside linebacker with maybe the smartest linebacker to ever play in Seattle other than like Bobby Wagner, but Keith Butler. And Keith told me that he would all of a sudden, you know, during a play just – turn to Keith and go, cover me, man, because I'm blitzing. I'm going. I'm going to go get the quarterback. And he would go get him. So, but, you know, Keith would have to kind of put himself in between the two zones, one he's supposed to cover and the one Fred is supposed to cover. But, no, I don't think it's so ingrained in you to be a teammate and to work within, I know in football anyway, everybody else is reliant on you doing your job.
Right.
So the selfishness there would be a pretty big deal and pretty noticeable to everybody else, no matter what the record.
Whereas in baseball, if you're being selfish, how is that showing up?
I like hearing that.
Swinging away, maybe on.
Or maybe you're trying to steal when you don't. Yeah. I mean, there could be
just
small.
Just having a bad attitude when things are going bad.
Right, but it wouldn't be as what he's pointing out. Somebody who's got an assignment. I've got to stay in this gap, otherwise.
Right.
Big yardage is going to be given up, yet you vacate that to make the spectacular play.
Yeah, maybe ignoring a signal or something, you know, maybe a pitcher throwing a pitch that the catcher didn't call for, who knows. But, yeah, I just don't think that happens that much because then all of a sudden you get kind of a bad rep and, you know, you want to be on another team and coaches and players are going to talk to one another. And, you know, if you get labeled as somebody that's selfish, then, yeah, they're not going to want you on their team.
Is Paul Morey a guy you thought ever played in a selfish way?
Never.
Never?
I'll say this. He was labeled something on the show sheet.
can we call him that?
I don't think
we
can.
Hey, no, that is for our personal
It's a very it's a
compliment.
It's an endearing term.
It's a description of a very tough dude. How about that?
yeah. I don't think there's any debate about his toughness. Coming up, we'll take a deep dive into the Seahawks secondary with the one and the only, we'll call him that, the one and only Paul Moyer. He joins us next. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore with Bob Stelton sitting in on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We are live from Edgar's Cantina. It's brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. And joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, a man we've all deemed as a tough guy, right? He's a tough guy. We won't read what's on the sheet. We'll just call him a tough guy.
Well, let's not talk about Mitch Haniger and... him taking one off the cup because Paul Moyer claims that he could have played the next week after having had a similar injury.
Is that right, Paul?
Well, I don't know if I would claim the following week. By the way, Danny, I love how you've changed your voice. No. No, I could not have played the next week, though I would have been practicing within 2 or 3 weeks. And I don't understand. The only thing I don't understand, the whole Mitch Haniger thing, is when they say the rehab isn't going well. I go, what's your rehab? You know, I just.
How do you exercise that part of your body?
You know, Dave, this is your show. I'll leave it alone.
As a producer, I appreciate that. Thank you, Paul.
Well, Paul, let's move to the Seahawks.
let's get away from this.
Let's get your take on what we watched last night. It was very typical in the sense of sloppy, a lot of flags, things like that for preseason game number one. Overall, though, what was your feeling of the defensive side of things? What was your takeaway?
You know, obviously preseason and going from air practices, you know, where you're not hitting to going after it. You know, it's an adjustment. The Denver had played the week before in the Hall of Fame bowl game, so I thought the first couple of drives they may have been a step ahead of the Seahawks. But it also reminded me a bit of how they play. You know, defensively they bend a little bit. Some teams game plan for our defense, and they're one of the best when they get down to the red zone. They force teams to kick field goals, frustrate them. There's only four or five possessions in the first half. A typical Seahawk game. Just keep it close and go and win in the second half. And it's not about, obviously, the team performance. It was more about individual performances. And I think we saw a lot. I thought we saw, you know, Cody Barton is the real deal. Once he settled down, he's a playmaker. I think Marquise Blair is going to be a guy that's going to be hard to keep off the field. So I think they saw what they needed to in last night's game.
Yeah, especially Blair, Paul. And I think that's been – I know that you weren't as high – it wasn't as urgent on your list that they get a safety. It's pretty high on mine. I feel like you need to get a hitter back there. And, you know, Tedrick Thompson's a great hitter. And you said, hey, he had a good year last year, but Blair seemed to really jump out. I liked that – you know, he had the hit. I thought it was pretty savvy for him to try anyway to get his head out of that hit down the middle. And then he had a nice tackle in open field. And to me, I think he probably stood out more than anyone else. How do you feel about the safety position?
Yeah, no, you know, and it's not that I didn't think we needed a safety. I just, you know, everybody's trying to maybe push Tedrick Thompson out. And I thought he played well last year. Particularly, you know, replacing Earl Thomas, you come into that situation, you're just trying not to screw it up. You know, you're not trying to do too much. Now he's in a position where he's more of a leader. You know, he knows what to do in that position. I expect him to play well. But we do need people. I mean, you look at our safety positions, you've got four guys right now. You know, maybe really you have four that I'm looking at, and I'm counting one of those as Lano Hill. So you needed to get somebody. The challenge, I think, is going to be is Blair, to me, is a strong safety, even though he's not that big. They played him up on the line of scrimmage in the box a bunch, and he came off the corner and made some big hits. He has really good hands, so he sheds blocks. And he has what I call a running back feel. He knows where that running back is going in the hole. And he did two or three times where he squared up on guys and Dave, you mentioned the one open field tackle. They ran a swing route to Freeman, who's a big, shifty back, and he took him down like, you know, he was a season All-Pro. So I like this guy. He had some rookie mistakes, that one bootleg where he came up on the line of scrimmage and got fooled and rushed the quarterback rather than being out in the flat. But he's going to be a really good football player, and I think he's going to push for starting time.
Yeah, I said it was undetermined as whether or not he ditched his coverage on that because we don't know, but it looked like it to me on that one.
I think Pete called him out after the game.
Yeah,
too.
I think okay. Pete definitely yeah. called him out on it. And I was watching it again before the show to prep for you guys. And
oh, wow. Ooh, we don't even prep for this show.
And I went to go look at some of his plays and, you know, just to make sure I didn't call him out, but he was up on the line of scrimmage. It looked like it was a bootleg. So it looked like it was a run away from him. And he bit on that. And I think he just said, there's a quarterback. No one's going to get him. I'm just going to rush him.
I was telling this earlier. He pulled a Fred Young. You played with
yes,
Fred Young.
Like,
I'm going to rush
that.
The quarterback on this. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in the middle of the field.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about safety, though, because I think with Earl making plays all over the place, you know, everybody expects, you know, that guy to come up with big numbers. But really, I mean, like you said, it's more than anything, free safety. It's about keeping everything in front of you, right? And so do you believe there's some unrealistic expectations set for that position?
Well, yeah, I mean, I happen to play and replace a guy who was a Hall of Famer, a guy named Kenny Easley. And I remember the players and some of the coaches. They said, hey, you have to play your game. You're not Kenny Easley, obviously. Don't try to be him. You know, play within. And, you know, Chuck Knox said, one of your greatest strengths is knowing your limitations. And I think Tedrick's in that boat, too. He's a good football player. He's a good tackler. He's smart. He knows how to, you know, get them in and out of certain defenses. And I think his strength is breaking on the football. And, you know, now he's in his second year as a starter. I think he'll even be better at that. But we got plenty of players in front of him. He doesn't have to be a 4-5 interception guy. Just keep the ball in front of you. Make sure everybody's in the right place. But if you got Marquise Blair starting, then McDougal goes to free safety. I know, you know, Bradley would rather be a strong safety. I think you'll see some packages in all three of those guys playing.
Paul, I thought it was great to see the different blitzes the Seahawks had last night, especially in the first preseason game. You think we're going to see more of that to help the defensive line out with the pass rush this year?
Yeah, Jim, I do. You know, we saw Blair up on the line of scrimmage. He came off the corner at least three times. We saw Ugo Amadi as well. We saw Shedd, who had the sack and the safety on that play. And I think that they feel comfortable with their corners. They played well, Flowers and Griffin. You know, it's where they can get those guys up there and come off the corner. So, yeah, I think you go back to 2013, our leading sack guy was Bennett with 8.5 sacks that year. We could see that this year, too. A couple guys with 8, a couple with 6. You're going to see some safeties with maybe a couple as well. Bobby Wagner in 2013 had 5 sacks. And I think you're going to see more of that type of thing. And I like it, especially if guys are good at it. And Marquise Blair, he's got a great feel for coming up on that line of scrimmage and rushing the quarterback and coming down the line and making plays in the running game.
Hey, what was your take on how the Griffin brothers both played? Because Shaquille, obviously, coming off a season where he was disappointed. A lot of fans were disappointed. He said he lost 12 pounds going into the season. Made a nice play last night. Shaquille made a nice play on the special teams. But I'm just curious, you know, most people look at him as a bubble guy. Everybody wonders, how is Shaquille going to respond if Shaquille gets cut? And, you know, just the connection between the two is really unique. So just your impressions of how they both played, and if Shaquille were to be cut, do you think that has any impact on Shaquille?
You know, that's just life. It's just business. I think Shaquille's he's got an uphill road because there are so many good linebackers right now. As a matter of fact, Dave, you know, before I get into Shaquille, Austin Calitro, holy Toledo, he played unbelievable. And not just stat-wise. I mean, he made big-time plays in the passing game. He knocked 2 third-down plays down. Or I think one was a third, one was a fourth down play. And he was huge in the running game. So I just think I think from a linebacker spot, that's going to be tough. Shaquille played well. It was hard. He didn't play that much. You know, he played some in the first half. Actually, probably played most of the first half. Made a couple good plays. What I was looking for him was just his confidence and his technique in that, you know, do you believe in your technique enough, you know, to be able to jam, not worried about getting beat deep, actually trusting the routes, you know, so if they do run a 12-yard comeback or 12-yard out, do you trust that enough that you'll make a play on it? And he made a couple of them. So I think he's going to play. I didn't think he was horrible last year. I just think the expectations were huge last year. But he does need to come to a level where he's a true shutdown corner. And I think he feels that way, and I think the coaches feel he's had a really good camp.
Paul, we really appreciate the prep you put into your appearance here. I think it showed.
Well, I thought we were going to talk Mariners, so it messed me up a little bit, but... It was good. Oh, hey, Danny, by the way, I love what you're doing with your voice. Keep it up.
Yeah, okay, thanks, man.
He's also in really good shape all of a sudden.
You know what? He sounds like he's in good shape.
Yeah. It's the new workout regime I've been on, I got to tell you. It's changed. I've gotten taller. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. Paul, thanks so much, man.
All right, guys. You guys appreciate
See
it.
Paul.
There you go. Paul Moyer, the great Paul Moyer.
You know what I say about Paul? I know everything about him. And I like him anyway.
Yes. You think he says that about you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
It's beautiful. Hey, this hour of Danny, Dave, and Moore is brought to you by Parsons Extreme Golf. Well, secondary might not be the Legion of Boom, but there is a lot of promise out there. We'll tell you what we're talking about next. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. Bob Stelton in for Danny O'Neill, live from Edgar's Cantina on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
I don't know if you would, Jim. I don't know if you would. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. Danny O'Neill out. He took my place today. He lost a bet, so he had to do a show with Groz and Tom. And I'm here with you guys, Bob Stelton, in with these guys. Live from Edgar's Cantina. It's brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. And by the way, the first four fans to stop by our broadcast today and show our street team that they've downloaded the 710 app, you're going to win a station T-shirt and a $25 gift card for T-Mobile Park. How about that?
Well, if you have a problem downloading anything, just come and see me and Jim.
These guys are technical
wizards.
Yeah,
we've got the answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a whiz.
Oh man, I was on the phone with T. Rowe Price the other day.
Yeah.
Probably for half an hour, and I was getting so mad because they wouldn't. I had my social security number, I had my account number, but I didn't have the right address, and so they wouldn't let me in, and yeah, I lost it.
Wait, you didn't know your address?
I lost it, and then I figured out, oh wait, I forgot to give them this address, and then I apologize.
You lost it, meaning you blew up on the phone? Or
yeah,
oh,
I did.
Okay.
I was rude, and then I apologized to the kid, and I go, hey, I'm really sorry.
my bad.
My mistake.
Totally my fault.
Yeah, it was.
Totally your fault. Well, get down here. You're going to get yourself a T-shirt and a $25 gift card for T-Mobile Park. Just show the street team that you've downloaded the 710 app. And again, that's for the first four fans to stop by the broadcast today. Do you usually get a lot of people coming out here?
Yeah. I mean, it's tailed off a little bit because of the Mariners this year. But, yeah, usually we get lots of people down here. It's great, man.
Yeah, it's Edgar weekend.
We get Karen and Nancy out here every time.
Bobbleheads, Karen and Nancy bring cookies sometimes, and it's just nice to see their cheery faces here. And so it should be a packed house tonight. Giving away 40,000 of these bobbleheads.
It's a big weekend. People like free stuff like that.
Yeah.
Still, bobbleheads are a big deal. I don't get it, but whatever.
Hey, they become so common.
I just don't get why they were ever so big, and they're still. I see people walk through the turnstile. They'll get one, walk back out, and they've got another cheap ticket that they bought, walk back in and get another bobblehead.
Yeah.
They'll have three or four of these things in their arms. It's amazing. We haven't even really talked about the game. We talked about it with Paul, but I haven't gotten takeaways from you guys. And Dave, let's start with you. Just, you know, brief overview of what stood out to you, good and bad.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to say the guy that proved the most was Paxton Lynch. I mean, Paxton Lynch, we haven't seen anything like that from him.
We've seen the opposite at practice, if we're being
really
honest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not been a great show at practice.
It's not been good. And, you know, and I know that, look, you're motivated playing against your old team, but just everything looked really good. I mean, he had a good night. He's the second leading rusher, and guy's not a running quarterback.
He's more elusive than I ever thought. As big as he is, he was decidedly faster than I thought he was. I mean,
well, how about twisting and turning to get into the end zone? I mean, that looked really good. So good for him, I would say, you know, and that's much better. I mean, practice is very important because it indicates like a day in and day out dedication to the game. But when you do it in a game and when the lights come on, you're a gamer. I mean, I still think that means more. But if he goes back to what we've seen from him in practice now, I think it's a bad sign because, you know, I feel like he's kind of found the recipe of, at least, and I don't expect him to do that every time, but he's found the recipe to have success in the NFL. He led a couple of really good drives, and he was, what was he, like 10 for 13?
11 for 15, 109 yards, 115 rating.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was happy for him. I really was, because I think he's a first-round draft choice, had a tough time in Denver, and it was really good for him. But other than that, you know, I thought just individuals, like Paul said, Austin Calitro, that was probably the one guy where you're like, you know, that guy didn't really need to have a good game because they don't need linebackers, but I'm happy for him. He may be auditioning for another team because it's going to be tough to make this roster as a linebacker, but Austin Calitro probably played better than anybody. And Marquise Blair was good. Cody Barton was good, you know, not great. And so, yeah, it was nice to see those guys get a chance. And then you saw, of course, Jazz Ferguson make some catches, looked really good. You expected that from DK Metcalf,
Right.
And you got it from Jazz Ferguson, the other guy that's the big-bodied receiver.
Yeah, I guess, you know, yeah, it stood out for me, too. Paxton Lynch, you hear everything about what was going on at training camp. And if you didn't know better, if you just turned on the game last night, he looked like the starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then Geno Smith having troubles. And, you know, he looked okay at times, but overthrowing Metcalf a couple of times. I thought Metcalf could have had that one, the second one.
Hit him in both hands, both fingertips. And every receiver tells you, if it hits my hands, I should have it.
Yeah, inside the final minute. I heard Danny saying that he didn't really like his body language after that. He hit the turf. But I kind of felt like it was... He felt like he should have been mad at himself and not really at Smith for the ball. And so it felt like he should have caught it. But, no, I thought all in all, I was encouraged by what you saw from Lynch. And then with Smith being out now, he's going to have this surgery to remove a cyst from his knee, and he's going to be out 7 to 10 days. So you expect he'll be gone for the Minnesota game. And so it's going to be more of an opportunity for Paxton Lynch to seize that backup role.
You know who might have had the most important game was Jacob Martin. Jacob Martin for the pass rush, he really is – he's got a relentless style. You know, it's like you see, like, when you watch Lawrence Taylor, there's – call it quick twitch, you know, like Frank Clark. You just see, like, maximum effort coming off the edge, and you see him being – always – when I coach high school kids, I say be stingy with the space. Like, don't loop around a guy. Just cut all the corners really tight. He understands that. Like, that's a guy, to me, who – football to him is an emergency. Like it's like a life and death situation. I got to get to this quarterback. That's what you see from him. And he had a quarterback sack and then a couple of hits too. I thought that was maybe the most important thing that happened last night, because pass rush, that and maybe Marquise Blair.
Well, and that's what we're all worried about is who's going to come up with the sacks. Who's going to be the guy? And in cut number five, in the post-game press conference last night, I asked Pete, you know, hey, did anybody on the defensive line stand out to you? That's been the biggest concern. Who stood out to you?
I thought Jacob Martin gave really good heat on his side, and Mingo at times too. I thought the edge guys were effective, but we're just getting started there.
Markevious Mingo played great special teams too. Really good job by him. So I think he's made the team. I don't think that there's much of a question there just because of that, those things. But, yeah, Jacob Martin, man, that was great to see. Rasheem Green was okay. He's probably the next guy that needs to come on. But that's probably the biggest thing, certainly on defense, is who's gonna fill that void of sacks. And really, you've only got one guy with a resume, really.
Ziggy.
It's Ziggy, right? Yep. He's got 48 sacks in his career. Nobody else. I mean, you could say Cassius Marsh. He had 5.5. I think he's got 11.5 career sacks. So, and then, you know, there's lots of talk about them possibly blitzing a little bit more. What does that look like? Yeah, they did. They sent Shed. And, like, what does that look like? I mean, if they blitz twice a game, maybe they blitz five times a game, you know, four times a game. I don't think it's going to be anything too ridiculous.
It is Danny David Moore live from Edgar's Cantina. Again, it's brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. Coming up, it's the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with the Professor John Clayton. Danny David Moore live from T-Mobile Park on 710 ESPN Seattle.